You are listening to Kilometre Zero by The Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app where fun is fast.
Daniel, here we are 3 or 4 days into the Giro d'Italia. Have you got your head around the fact that it is the Giro? As we drove off Mount Etna tonight, it was dark, and it struck me that that's very unusual at a Grand Tour to be heading away from the stage with darkness falling.
Yes, Rich, it's quite disorienting, isn't it? There's a certain feel in the air, particularly when you've been doing the Giro for many years. May becomes synonymous with the Giro, and the Giro becomes synonymous with many other, well, visions of Italy and flavours of Italy, of course, that we always speak about in the podcast. But, you know, I think of the sort of poppies, particularly on the up in the north of Italy and the flatlands of the Po Delta, and, you know, the light, the long nights. And, quite different here. You know, you get the sense that Italy's back to work, and the stage starts and stage finishes are quite muted. And it is quite strange, and I think we imagined a few months ago when we did our Giro and we talked about the Giro of the rebirth, or a Giro of the rebirth, we expected it to feel, or we were maybe thinking it would feel, very festive and like a big celebration of life getting back to normal. But of course, life isn't back to normal yet, is it? And the Giro is not back to normal.
No, I mean, the COVID crisis struck first and very hard in Italy, of course. And I get the sense, I've had a sense since that happened, of a sense of trauma in Italy and among Italian riders. A lot of them talk about it, perhaps more than riders from any other country. I'm not exactly sure why that is, but it's cast a long shadow, hasn't it? And, COVID is still with us and it's still present. But I think I've got a real sense in Italy of just how big a trauma that was when it hit, and how we're still, it's still kind of getting over that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we spoke in the spring about how Italy's history is sort of pockmarked with these, well, natural disasters, many of them, but also, you know, there have been these huge political catastrophes that have forced the country to change course abruptly. And that's been a theme in the modern history of Italy. And this has felt like one of those, I think, to the people of Italy.
Well, this is our first episode of Kilometre Zero from the Giro d'Italia, supported by Zwift. Thanks very much to Zwift. And in this episode, we're going to hear from our audio diarist. We've got a squad, a crack squad of 6 riders here at the Giro, sending us daily dispatches, and we'll hear the best of them here. We've got a couple of Italians in the mix, Jacopo Guarnieri from Groupama FDJ, and Cesare Benedetti from Bora Hansgrohe, who did a day in the life diary for us during the Giro last year. We felt it was important to have a couple of Italian voices in there. We've also got James Knox from De Koenig Quickstep, who kept a diary for us at the Vuelta last year. Nathan Haas from Cofidis, Rick Zabel from Israel Startup Nation, and Joe Dombrowski, turning the clock back, because he kept an audio diary for us in 2016 at the Giro. He was the first rider we ever asked to keep an audio diary at a Grand Tour, in fact. They're all going to be telling us bits about the race, about their race. And Nathan Haas is going to be telling us a lot about pasta. So that'll be an interesting way of celebrating Italy as well, which is something we all like to do. But we're going to hear first from Jacopo Guarnieri, who is on Groupama FDJ and is a very handy member of the Arnaud Démare lead-out train. And we'll hear his diary, but just to introduce him a bit more. He's not somebody that many of you will perhaps know all that well, but just by way of introduction to Guarnieri, here he is in conversation with Daniel at the start of stage 3 in Enna.
So Jacopo, first of all, I would like to know how an Italian ends up being Arnaud Démare's lead out man. So explain a little bit, briefly, the last few years of your career. You've generally been in foreign teams since Liquigas. But how did it happen that you ended up at Groupama with Arnaud?
Oh, well, basically opportunity. Since I left Liquigas, which folded a few years later, you know, we didn't have any more an Italian team. So we start to move to foreigner teams. And I followed Christoph before at Katusha, which was really good time with him for 2 years. And then I took this opportunity. He was a rising sprinter, Arnaud, even though he was somebody we knew he could have been there because he came from a world championship as an under 23. Well, he won the Sanremo and he won a Lido guy and I was available and I said, why not? So I tried and until now, I could say pretty... We worked pretty well, you know. We got a lot of success during the last 4 years, and we are here to increase our victories together for sure.
And you're an untypical Italian rider in the sense that, well, you've ridden for a lot of international teams. You speak perfect English, but you live in Italy. There aren't too many Italian World Tour pros now who live in Italy, are there?
Yeah, it's true. Well, maybe it's the salary, we could say. No, for sure there are guys that can, you know, live well away from their own home, and which is not my case. I'm well settled, even though I'm not originally from the area I'm living. But I love my place. I love living there. I love to see my friends. So we were talking about Italians that move away. If I think like living in Lugano or Monaco, which are the most common destinations, I will die probably because my roots are there. And
where is that?
Castel Arquato is a really nice town, a medieval town. So for everybody who's coming to Italy, I suggest you to come and visit. It's a really famous in Italy. So I don't see myself in a country that doesn't suit me. So I could move in Italy because there is not only one place I like, but outside Italy it will be really difficult for me. Yeah, no, I'm from Milan actually. I'm living in Piacenza, so yeah, the two cities are not far. But yeah, when I was kid I moved with my family, and so I grew up in more or less in the region around there. My parents are still at about 40k from my home, and already 10 years I'm living there, so I'm well settled, and I know everybody. My village is pretty small because it's 100 inhabitants, so really small. But we got a bakery, so I can say I can survive pretty well.
And Jacopo, it's been a difficult few months for Italy, but you're that area in particular. You're not too far from Codogno, where the first outbreak was, and I think your family has been affected by coronavirus as well. Just talk to me a bit about the last few months and how much it means to be here at the start of this Giro della Ripartenza.
I don't know if it was coronavirus or not, because my grandmother died during the pandemic, and yeah, she didn't get tested, but yeah, clearly it was something like this. But she was old, so she lived her own life. But well, it was strange not being able to be on at any funeral or just say to stay close to my grandfather, which was alone. So it was a tough time for everybody. And my region was the fourth province in Italy for death, so it was not easy. We were really close to Codogno, so the next one, really a lot of people were basing their own business in my region, so it was, yeah, it was crazy time. But yeah, overall, I could say, except for this, as I said, she was old and already sick before, so I take it like in the best way possible. She lived her own life, and all my family, the closest family, they're still healthy, so that's the most. And it's good to be here. It's good we are starting as Italy. We are doing pretty well, which is a surprise, because we is a typical part of Italian complaining about our own country, and now we can't. So I'm feeling a little bit weird, but it's good, and I hope it stays like this, because of course we want to finish the Giro, but main overall of this is that everybody's safe. You know, if we can finish the Giro, that means the situation is pretty good. So I hope it can stay like this.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jacopo Guarnieri. I'm a rider of Groupama FDJ. So this is my second Giro so far. First one was last year, so I'm pretty a new guy, even though I'm Italian. We are in Sicily. It's pretty warm, so we're gonna head to the north in a few days to reach the cold that survived in Italy, and we will face it during our Alps journey. So let's stay with us for some more info and funny stories, because the gruppetto always have some funny stories and some interesting ideas that comes in mind when you're far, far from the peloton. See you guys.
Hi everyone, it's James Knox here, Ryan for Defending Quick Step. Hopefully you still remember me. Obviously it's not my first time doing the podcast now. Ready for my second Giro. Starting in Sicily tomorrow with a interesting looking time trial with main of it very, very fast downhill. So I think that'll be the first controversy of the Giro coming up very shortly. Had a few days in Sicily. Actually, in Italy in general, I was already out for the Worlds in Bologna and Imola, and then I stayed there for a couple more days before traveling here to Sicily. My first time in Sicily. A little bit different to the rest of Italy, actually, and it's been pretty nice riding around a lot of lovely countryside with the vineyards and, all that sort of business. Pretty excited to get going, see how the legs are. Pretty nervous, excited, but not going to put too much pressure on myself, obviously. Last year's Gran Tour at the Vuelta went well. The preparation into this has gone also pretty good with a nice turn in form at Tirreno Adriatico, where I finished seventh in the end, which was actually on the back of a few races where I hadn't been going so well. But finally got rid of that sluggish lockdown feeling. It took me long enough. It took me a few months. Had to lose quite a few extra kilos, if I'm being honest, and get that race feeling back into legs. But I'm here now. And we're just going to see day by day, I guess. That's the cliche, isn't it? Take it day by day. You know, it worked for me at the Vuelta last year. So I'm not really putting a load of expectation and pressure on myself. We've also got an interesting team here. It's not the team that we were intending to be at the Giro with Remco and Fabio. Obviously suffering nasty injuries and unable to be with us. So we've got Alvaro and Ballerini for the sprints. And myself, João Fausto, for a sort of three-pronged, I'd like to say give it a go at GC, but not too worried about the GC attack, where we'll just hang in there, see how we're going. If we start losing time, we've got the opportunity for breakaways. You know, we're a team that's quite often take the responsibility for riding on the front, but it's going to be a little bit different this year with, you know, I don't think anyone's going to be looking to us to get on the front to ride for sprints, certainly not with GC riders, so that's a sort of brief summary of how the Giro's looking so far. Stage one done. The big priority of the day was to get through unscathed, no problems. And I failed. So, yeah, a little bit annoyed right now. Crashed on the final corner a bit frustratingly. Just came in too fast. Really annoyingly now, because I took everything else pretty calm, got through all the sketchy moments of the day. And yeah, then binned it, last hairpin, just came in too fast. I think just washed out on the white line, front wheel, obviously. So yeah, not a great start, but no problems, no damage, just pride's taking a real beating, as you can imagine. And yeah, one of many, of quite a few guys I'll be wearing, who I think will be wearing bandages tomorrow. But yeah, I've got to say, it was a pretty hair-raising time trial, to be honest. Not sure I'm a big fan. Yeah, very, very windy. I think it was like 40 kilometers per hour, like standard wind, but well, some of those gusts through the town must have been 50, 60, even faster kilometers per hour, that is. Just sprint up the first kilometer climb, get over the first, the top of the, through the town, try and tuck a little bit on the bike on the descent, take the first corners, and then the plan was just to stay on the tri bars and just keep it in a straight line and go fast all the way down into Palermo. But whoa, I was getting blown from left to right, from left to right. And in the end, I think I did probably like halfway down that long straight on the, you know, the little side bars, not the time trial bars. But yeah, it was really, really sketchy. Got through the rest of it all right. And then, yeah, like I said, I even caught my minute man and then binned it. So he probably having a bit of a laugh to himself, a guy from Cofidis. Came flying past him, well, maybe not flying past him, but came past him, going well enough, and then, yeah, decked it. So, yeah, that'll teach me. Other than that, probably a pretty nerve-wracking day in general. Obviously, the big build-up to a first-time trial, and then all the conditions, and sat on the bus watching first man off, douse it, almost go down on one of those downhill corners, and then watching Campanaps crash. So, was a little bit stressed before the race. quite happy it's done out of the way now. And a very, very promising result from our young man, João Almeida. Really strong ride. I guess other notable things would be the wind changed, which we were onto, and got our like sort of GC riders out there early enough to not cause a problem. But it looked like Micah, Kelderman, Fuglsang, Nibali, maybe some others, but those are the guys I can think of. Appeared to have lost quite a lot of time on Thomas and Yates already, who set off early. So that's probably the interesting part of the day. But yeah, what a mad start to the Giro that was.
My name is Joe Dombrowski. I ride for UAE Team Emirates, and this is my fifth Giro d'Italia.
Hi, everybody. Just finished stage one of the Giro. A bit of a unconventional time trial. I don't think I've ever done a downhill TT like that. And to be honest, the biggest factor was probably the wind. I don't think I've ever raced in wind like that either. And, you know, it's interesting when you get weather conditions, be it rain, cold. It seems like everybody's always talking in the bus about what to wear. You know, do I wear this base layer, these arm warmers, these knee warmers? You know, do you take a rain jacket or no? And there's always a lot of chatter about that on the bus. But today it was definitely what wheels do you run? Because we had a short climb and then a really fast descent. I think not me, but some of the bigger, heavier and more aero guys probably did over 100 k's an hour. And there's a really strong wind that I think comes out of Africa to the south of Europe. And the nature of the course, the way it was on city streets, you'd occasionally get really strong gusts when you would come across a crossroad. And it was quite dangerous. So there was a lot of debate as to what wheels to run today, but overall got through it safe. And I wouldn't say that downhill windy time trials are my specialty, but yeah, got through it and looking forward to the rest of the race. We've got a good mix of guys with our team here at UAE. A number of former stage winners, guys like Richese, Gaviria, and Diego Ulisi. We've got a couple young riders and we've got myself. I think, you know, in our team, it's a team that will look to win stages. As I mentioned, we've got a number of guys that have won stages in the past, and there's a good mix of stages in this Giro where I think we can show that. So, hopefully things continue on a good way. We had Mikael Bjerg in third today, which is a really good ride. I mean, he's a Neo Pro, and personally, I don't know exactly where I am coming into this Giro. And I think for a lot of people this season, it's the same where, you know, we don't have necessarily the same races as a reference going into big objectives, just due to the nature of the calendar, having not raced for 6 months and then compressing everything into a short season. I think there's a lot of guys in the bunch that don't know exactly where they're at, but hopefully everything comes together nicely and it's going to be a great 3 weeks. Having won the Tour de France this year, I suppose you could look at it in two ways. On one hand, maybe there's more pressure in the sense that the level's been risen, but on the other hand, you know, the team's won the biggest race, and I think there's a lot of maybe stress coming into what is a really short and compressed season after a long break. I do think that the perception of the team, maybe you have more respect, and that is harder to kind of identify when you're not within the peloton. But there is a bit of a pecking order in the bunch as we ride around. And, you know, for the last almost decade, really, a team like Ineos was a reference within the bunch. And, you know, you don't see Ineos ever ride at the back. They're always together at the front. And the fact that they always ride together as a unit people respect them. And when they come through, sometimes it's just a bit easier for them to move around. And I think now that the team's won the tour and gotten off to such a successful start, maybe that plays a role as well. But again, that's something that, you know, you don't see these subtleties when you watch the race on TV, but it's very much something that exists within the bunch.
You are listening to Kilometer Zero by The Cycling Podcast, powered by Zwift, the fitness app that turns indoor riding into a game. Explore endless roads, race riders from all over the world, and boost your fitness with monthly training plans and structured workouts. Join the world's training playground, where fun is fast. Go to Zwift.com and start your free trial.
I'm Mitch Docker, pro cyclist for EF Education First, pro cycling team. Zwift plays two roles for me in my training. It is the top end stuff, the last effort I need to do before a grand tour. And my coach puts me on Zwift to get the finer details right before I hit a grand tour. It's like, okay, we've got 10 days of Zwift. Let's get that finer detail in. We combine it with the road riding. We chuck a Zwift on in the evening. And that's that little extra special tip that we have before we hit a grand tour. And then secondly, what I've now found out is lockdown, time at home. It keeps me at home. I'm able to pump out one or two sessions a day. When I'm at home, I'm there with the family and I can get my work done quickly, easily, and I'm still at home. So it's a double-edged sword for me. It's hardcore or it's enjoyable when I'm at home. Once the weather gets bad, you can stay inside and you can get the quality done and it's enjoyable. You can chat with your mate on the phone or you can see him there and chat on the screen and you can ride in a bunch. You've got people to ride with. There's no longer those days of sitting in a dark room, punching away on an ergo, watching your Garmin, watching the seconds tick by. That's what I like about it, that instead of trying to go out and fight the rain, fight the weather, I can stay inside. An hour is enough, an hour and a half if you want, 2 hours if you're really good. And that is going to be enough to do for me in the middle of the winter, in the bad weather, to get the training done.
Hi, my name is Cesare Benedetti, but you can call me Caesar in English. I ride for Bora Hansgrohe, and this is my fifth Giro. So here we are after the first weekend of this Giro d'Italia. It doesn't really feel like it's October here, thanks to the fact that I have only 16 race days this year, 8 of them already in January before the lockdown, and eight race days before this Giro, actually 1 month without races before this Giro, but then I don't feel like it's autumn, thanks also to the warm and sunny weather here. We will see what's the weather gonna be like in the last 2 weeks, but yeah, now we're enjoying this summertime. And yeah, we had this stormy weather yesterday, just very warm but very windy during the time trial. I think this affected a lot the TT, especially the GC riders. We saw that some of them started in the second part of the race, and then they didn't benefit of the tailwind, like the guys who started at the beginning. Unfortunately, we had Rafał Majka, who started in the last position. And, you know, the directors have to decide the order of the riders already 2 days previous the race, so it wasn't easy to guess how the wind is gonna be, although the of course they checked the weather, but in 2 days everything can change, especially considering that we are on an island here next to the sea. The weather is the wind is quite changeable, but yeah, there will be some mountains soon for Rafa to try to recover the time he lost. And yeah, about the first real stage, I mean the second stage today on Sunday, Peter was close again to finish off the day. I think it's we wanted to score a result with him. We didn't actually know if the finish would be too hard for him, but it was worth it to give it a try. And yeah, and then he was there. I think I haven't met him yet, but I think he's pretty happy because there weren't so much sprinters there. There were some fast guys, of course, some punters, but yeah, he was there, and this is it's very good to proceed in an optimistic way for the next stages. Today it was also a day for Liège-Bastogne-Liège. I've taken part in this race 6 times. I did all last 6 editions, and yeah, I'm pretty sorry that this year Giro and Liège-Bastogne-Liège are at the same time. It's probably for me the most beautiful one day race we have. I cannot say exactly why, but yeah, I've grown up with this thought that La Doyenne is just the best classic you can have. And yeah, actually I'm happy to be in the Giro because I've got so less race days this year, and yeah, I need some race days, so I hope to go through this Giro, and there will be for sure a chance next year to be again part of Liège during the Spring's Classic, hopefully with less problems than this year during this pandemic time. Hi, well, I haven't seen the crash, and honestly, I haven't seen any bottles flying in this neutral section. I was in the very front of the peloton in this 7 kilometers neutral because I was supposed to control the beginning of the stage and have a look who's going in the breakaway. The road was quite okay, I think, in the neutral zone. I can't really understand why there were bottles flying. The surface was okay, maybe a bit slippery, but there were no holes, I think, not so many, I think. I don't really know what happened. I've seen there's a video online, but I haven't watched it yet, and I don't know if I wanna watch it. I don't like to see crashes. But the speed might have been fast. It was quite steep, I think, some part of the neutral zone. We got the information through the radio. They told us that we're gonna stop at the kilometer zero in order to wait for the rider who crashed, and there I found out that it was Geraint Thomas. Yeah, I feel very, very sorry about that. Not just because it's him, but anyway, it's always bad to crash and to crash in the neutral zone, especially when you got a tough stage in front of you with a mountain top finish. Yeah, it's terrible. Yes, in 4 years, I was 3 times on the Etna, and in every occasion, the breakaway was successful. In 2017, Jan Poland won. In 2018, Chavez and Casado this year. So it looks like the Etna stage is for breakaways. In 2017, there was the road was wider, and there was a strong headwind on the Etna, and the road was not so covered like in the other two editions. The road was wider, if I remember well, and we were going much more through these black stones, these black rocks made from lava, and Poland was successful, and then there was there was a bigger group, like I think 20 riders all together, so maybe it was not so so nice, so exciting to watch like in 2018 and like this year. I think that the hardest one might be the one we did 2 years ago in 2018 when Chavez won the road. There were some pretty steep sections, and the road was quite narrow in some parts, if I remember well. This year, maybe the beginning is always tough, and then there were some flatter sections, and then some kicks towards the final. I think the hardest one was in 2018, but I think what makes the Etna stage really hard is it's also the approach to the final climb. There are always these twisty roads, narrow roads, up and down, where everyone fights for position. And this is sometimes you hit the final climb and you're really a bit on the limit. I think for us today, for Bora Hansgrohe, was let's say it was successful. After the time trial, I think Rafa Majka is now a bit more optimistic. He was in a good mood after the stage, so I think he's happy now with his performance today. He wanted to try to win the stage as well, but this was not possible. But we saw many surprises today. With Geraint, with Yates. So I think this Giro is going to be really open until the very end.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rick Zabel and I ride for Israel Startup Nation. This is my third Giro. I did the Giro as well in 2015 and 2016. So now after a few years I do the Giro again. The Giro starts in Sicily this year. I arrived already on Tuesday. We had now 3 days to get ready. We did a corona test, we did a blood test, which you always do in front of or before a grand tour. And the team presentation happened as well. Was not pretty spectacular, to be honest. I'm not a big fan of team presentation. I don't really know who needs this, but whatever. The biggest news of the team presentation was for sure the new jersey from Education First. The collab between Rafa and Palace is pretty nice. I think they did a really good job there, especially Palace is a cool brand, and it's nice to see a brand like this in cycling. Good job there. Then we had a look as well on the Tyrrell parcours already yesterday on Thursday, and it's going to be spectacular. Most of it is downhill. I'm pretty sure we're gonna break the record, which is 58.5 kilometers per hour, I think, at least. So I'm pretty sure we're gonna beat that, and the winner gonna beat it for sure. Maybe even I can beat it with this parkour. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to start my third Giro tomorrow. And who's on our team? East World Startup Nation came here with a heavy team. Let's call it this way. We will focus on the leadouts, on the sprints, and on the time trials. We have just two climbers here, Alexander Catterford and Daniel Navarro. And yeah, the rest of the team is Matthias Brendle, Alex Dowsett, Davide Cimolai, Guy Sagiv, and Rudy Barbier, and me. So we are all guys for the flat stages, which are our big objectives. So I'm happy to do this. Just this diary for you, and we hear us more often now. Bye bye, my friends. Hello. One day in the blue jersey, it was nice. Of course, I was happy to have my first jersey in a Grand Tour and to have it on. During the stage was a nice feeling. A lot of riders came to me and said that it was a nice move, which I did yesterday. So this is always nice when others appreciate what you did. And of course, I had in mind, in the best case, that I also can wear the jersey tomorrow up to Etna, but Sagan was too strong. I tried one or two times to go on the breakaway. Actually, I was even in the decisive one, but then Thomas de Gendt and Bora also decided Thomas de Gendt wants to go on the breakaway, and Bora didn't want to have me in the breakaway, I think. So I gave up quite fast to go on the break to save some energy, and then I knew that Thomas had 3 points, the same like me, so it would come down to the stage placing. Whoever is better there would have the jersey, because also, of course, in the final time was also 3 points, but I reckon that the stage winner also will have the sprints jersey, so I could have won in the blue jersey tomorrow. The only thing which shouldn't happen in this case is that Sagan, it would be fine if Sagan wins the stage, but if Sagan gets second or third, he will wear blue. So exactly that's what happened. He got second, and now he has 1 point more than me. So he will wear the blue jersey tomorrow. It is what it is. I was a little bit disappointed after the stage. I can live with it, because it was a nice day, and I think I did a good move yesterday in the GT, and now I'm looking forward to an easier day, just going through the stage, and then there are a few stages coming up where I have a goal again. So that's been my Giro so far. Hello everyone. Stage 3 is done. Oh, I can't believe it's still 18 stages. Every time it's the same in a Grand Tour, that the days won't pass in the beginning, or at least it's for me like this. It's too far ahead to think about it, so I think day by day. Today was the first real mountain stage. For me, it was the first time I did this Etna climb in the end, and 18 kilometer. It was actually nice to ride up, because it's never that steep, but it's a long climb. And yeah, the breakaway went quite easy, and then Mitchelton started chasing all day. Pretty hard, it was a strong breakaway. So all day was racing full, and I was dropped, I think, with 35 or 40k to go on the last two hills before the real climb, because we had a massive time limit today. It was clever to save some energy, because it was a hard day of racing, even though it was short. And then I was in the Gruppetto and had an easy ride up to Etna. And I'm actually more tired than I should be after 3 days. But I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Maybe it's a sprint day. Maybe we get dropped on the climb before. Let's see what's going to happen.
Ciao a tutti! I'm Nathan Haas, I ride for Team Cofidis, and this is my fourth Giro. I love cycling, I really, really love the Giro, but I don't really wish to talk about cycling for the next few weeks. If I'm honest, it gets a little bit boring. It's all I'm going to be doing, looking at guys in Lycra, suffering up mountains, trying to win stages and trying to avoid crashes. So this one here, this show, or I don't know if I'd call this a show, it's more of a little bit of a boredom killer. But this boredom killer is for the gluten gluttons out there, the pasta passionados and the fettuccine fanatics, for lovers of all shapes, sizes, and sources of pasta. I'm going to walk us, Nate, ride us through the many regions of pasta as we roll through them day by day to both taste and learn about this beautiful country, its food, and to distract me from the imminent suffering of 3 weeks racing. So first up, I've been here in Sicily in a cute little area called Trapani, which is famous for its pesto trapanese. It's not the Genovese we all know, the basilico with the basil and the pine nuts. This is red. It has tomato, almond, garlic, oil, and parmigiano. It's amazing. It has crunch. It's sweet. It's a risk taker. I feel like it's the proverbial bad boy of the pesto world. I really rate it. It goes great with penne. We've tried it with a few different pasta shapes, and I'm with the locals here. It's served best with penne. Over the next few days, we're still staying in Sicily, but rest assured, there's not just trapanese here. There's a few different regions of pasta, a few areas that are famous, and I really look forward to talking about and hopefully trying the one that's famous on Mount Etna. Anyway, ciao. So we just finished the Donna gnocchi. Sorry, we were just interrupted a little bit by some enthusiastic waiters, but today we just finished the time trial, and now tomorrow is the first road stage, so carbing up is a little bit more important, which is very convenient for my pasta fetish. Tonight, we actually just have a simple pomodoro. And what type of pasta is this again? Okay, so I was told the wrong name before by Consoni. But I think if I used that name, it would have been something offensive, but this is a nice style of pasta. I'll try to correct myself on it tomorrow. But pomodoro sauce is it's like the staple. It's just the red sauce. It feels safe. It feels homely. It feels like mom's giving you a nice warm hug. So tonight, pasta pomodoro. Nothing special, but sometimes the simple things are the best. So today we are closer to Palermo, which is known for its pasta alla sardi, which is a sauce with sardines. It's pretty fitting because we're staying at a beautiful hotel on the beach. I can imagine the fishermen catching the sardines in the morning, nice and fresh, but nowhere to race. So, you know, we're not always, a la carte and able to have the pasta of the region. So when I do get a chance to have the pasta of the region, it's going to be pretty special. But tonight again, we are with pomodoro, and a few of us are going to be having pasta bianco. We had quite a few crashes today, unfortunately, for a few guys in the race, Elia, Consoni, and Ide. They're all okay, and I'm certain that this good al dente pasta tonight is going to put them in good spirits and get their recovery really going nicely before tomorrow. It's always hard when there's a crash, but the spirits are good, and the Giro is long. We are ready to fight. Hi everybody, Nathan Haas here again after stage 3 of the Giro d'Italia. Quite a crazy stage 3, to be honest. Lots of drama, as you all know, but just the fact that we already had a mountaintop finish at the end of third stage and we haven't had a real sprint stage yet. Kind of surprising, you know, it's not the
it's not the kind of regular format that we're used to with Grand Tours. So it's, you know, just like 2020, everything's a little bit different, as is the Giro. But today we were still in Sicily, and we went to Mount Etna, which was truly one of the cooler places that you can ride a bike up. You go through so many different, it actually almost feels like climates. You know, you're going almost through a temperate rainforest at one point. Lower down on the slopes, you really get that sort of like dry Mediterranean feel. And then all of a sudden, after the rainforest, you poke out and everything is just really barren rock, volcanic rock, black. And you get to the top and it's kind of eerie. So it was quite cool. And to keep on the same vein of celebrating pastas, Mount Etna has an area underneath which is famous for a pasta called pasta alla norma, which is actually with red tomato, which is symbolic of the red lava that flows out, and pistachio. They call it the green gold of Sicily. It's the only area in Italy where they can actually grow pistachio, and the nut itself is apparently really hard to grow and only really grows in certain areas around Mount Etna, which is why they make a pasta sauce with pistachio inside. Sadly, I didn't get to try it tonight. We were getting to the hotel pretty late and we couldn't do any sort of a la carte ordering or sort of what was prepared, but it's definitely a pasta that I think I'm going to get into the kitchen and try making myself. Sounds super interesting. Moving on for tomorrow though, it's our first real sprint stage where we get to try with Elia. We're super hungry for victory. We really want to fight in the final, and I personally want to do a fantastic job for the lead out. It's something that I love doing, and sometimes it can feel even cooler having your teammate win from a real team effort than it does winning yourself. So for tomorrow, all in for Elia, and yeah, let's hope for the best and we'll celebrate with a great pasta.